Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And JD.
And Matt.
Wow, Matt, you're replacing John permanently. Oh no, no, no. John's not here this week. He had other business to take care of, but filling in for him is the one and only Matt Vroom, our lovely review writer for the website. How you doing, Matt?
Great, I'm glad to be back with you guys.
Cool, so... Anything exciting you guys want to talk about? JD, you were hinting at something last week.
Yeah, Matt and I are both, we'll start off with this right away. Matt and I are both participating in, NaNoWriMo, which would be National Novel Writing Month.
Okay.
Hashtag NaNoWriMo on Twitter. It's basically, a bunch of writers on Twitter are taking the challenge of writing a 60,000 word novel in 30 days. That's the point of it is you kind of challenge yourself. And then every day you post how your writing was going and how many words you're doing. I'm averaging about 2,000 words a day. I have some days that I'm awesome and I have days that I'm not so great. So it's good as you get that average. You know, real life kicks in and the point is just to write and not to go back and look and just to get that. I wouldn't recommend anybody write a novel in 30 days and release it, but it's a great way to knock that first draft out. And, it's a really fun thing. I know Matt and I have been playing back and forth on Twitter, you know, giving each other updates on where we're standing. And, you know, it's really good. I'll talk more about my first novel probably next week on the show. I'll have an announcement to make about that, but this is my second one and I'm having a good time writing this. And, it's been fun. It's kind of cool. I've actually picked up quite a few Twitter followers from just using the NaNoWriMo hashtag. So that was an unexpected byproduct of it, but it's fun. I'm having a good time with it. What do you think, Matt?
Oh, definitely. I thought it was 50,000.
Is it 50? Well, yeah. I'm just dominating that much that I'm going to get 10,000 more words.
I was going to say, man, I'm stressing out already on just the 50. But this is my first novel I've written, so it's a different experience than a comic book writing is for me. Because not only do I have to write the dialogue, I also have to write what the characters are thinking and how they look. And that's fine when I'm writing a script, but it's really exciting. This is my first novel. I could talk a little bit more about it because it's definitely going to be a while before I edit it or make sure it's release worthy.
Right.
But it's called Alec Truman and the Space Hero. It's about this a kid whose dad is a space hero, and it's kind of cool. I don't know.
Cool. That sounds like a cool challenge, though, for any writer.
I think it is, and I think for comic guys especially, it really kind of stretches you to flex some muscles you might not be used to using. And, you know, if you're a self-published or if you're a self-made indie guy anyway, why not? Why not get into it? Why not start writing some novels too and just try to grow your fan base a little bit?
Yeah. Cool. Yep.
Before I forget, before we continue, I actually have a little bit of business from last week. It's regarding our sponsor, Vault. I had mentioned that it's available for Windows through the Chrome plugin, and apparently it doesn't work on Windows. Right now it only works on iOS. So again, though, people who are interested in cybersecurity, definitely check out vault.io/superhero speak. I'm sorry, /superhero. There's no speak on that code. And give it a try. It's definitely a unique way to store your passwords and protect them. So. I just needed to make sure we said that correction. So, thank you to our sponsor again.
Well, good job.
Yeah. So since we have Matt with us today, JD,
we can
talk a little bit about that wonderful place, superheroespeak.com.
Yeah.
For those who are listening to the podcast, if you didn't find us through the website, make sure you check out superheroespeak.com. every day for updates. Matt's always writing reviews and putting them up. We have a bunch of print Q&As that are going to be released soon. And of course, I have a few rants in me that I need to get out. they'll be up. And I know JD is going to probably put his novel up there once it's done.
That is the announcement. Next week, we'll get into details about that.
There you go.
But as of right now, the Matt Vroom is, in my opinion, one of the best comic reviewers on the internet. He's doing fantastic work for us at Superhero Speak. I think you guys got to get on there and check out what he's doing. And he's got a great critical mind that he shares with everyone.
Yes.
Well, man, thanks, JD. I appreciate that.
I mean it, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate all the work you do, Matt. It's great.
Well, the site's growing. I mean, we got a lot of stuff happening, especially we launched a new webcomic
two weeks
ago.
Sonic Hero Siren.
Talk. Yep. Sonic Siren.
And Hero Talk, yes. I'm loving them. He had his first guest was Thor.
Yeah, Thor Odinson.
Yes. Yes, so, we know it's a play on Space Ghost Coast to Coast, and we don't care.
No. In fact, we're taking that concept and we're proving on it, hopefully.
Cool. So I guess the big thing that I wanted to talk a little bit about this week, next week, of course, this weekend actually, Justice League's coming out. I did a little poll on the internet and asked, who is your favorite Justice League character? And of the choices I gave were the main three, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and I can't choose. And, I accidentally set this for, a whole day. So, and I just did it today. So it's still running. But after this recording, Batman is in the lead with 46%. Wonder Woman's in second place with 29%. Superman in third. Wow. That's interesting to me. 17%. I can't choose has 8%. And Matt Vroom wants to know, where's the Flash?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I like the Flash. I think from all the reviews that since the embargo's lifted, a lot of people are saying it's Flash steals the show with Aquaman. So it's funny that those two weren't on it.
Right. Well, you can only give four choices.
Yeah. No problem. But I voted for Superman on the
list. Okay. See, I was shocked that he was in third place. I guess that does show there is a shift in people's, you know, perception of the comics nowadays. Would you guys agree with that, or am I nuts?
As far as
Superman, I think if you went back 20 years ago, Superman would probably be close tie with Batman.
I don't think you're correct on that. I think you have to go back further than 20 years ago. Batman's been kind of the man in pop culture for a long time now.
Yeah.
You know, I think probably since at least 89. You know, Batman's had a firmer, like in the day, I would totally say Superman. But I think since the 80s, Batman's had a firmer grasp on popular culture than Superman has.
So you're saying I'm old. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's how you could read into it.
I would also say just the box office, movies, I guess the movie performance.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people looked at Man of Steel. It's kind of mixed bag, I think.
That's terrible.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. That's your opinion, JD. but I think that the fact that people didn't like that movie as much as they've liked Ben Affleck as Batman or even Christian Bale as Batman, even like I'm talking about my age group, you know,
right,
post Keaton. So I think that has to do a lot with it. And also how successful Wonder Woman has and how huge of impact since the Wonder Woman movie came out that she's had on the culture in general. I think that also is bolstering her popularity as well.
All right. I definitely agree with the Wonder Woman aspect. All right. So now let's see how well you guys know the Justice. The majority of these questions are related to the comic book. Yes, we're going to have a little fun trivia contest. And Matt, you haven't been around for these. So how it works is I go back and forth. If you get it right away, it's 2 points. If you don't know, your opponent can steal, but only gets 1 point if he gets the steal correct.
Okay.
And, JD is the reigning champ. he beat John last time. So he gets to choose if he goes first or you go first.
I will always go first.
All right. Then we will start with a very obvious question. Where and when was the first appearance of the Justice League?
The comic is Brave and the Bold. Okay. Now, define the when.
Year.
Oh, jeez. 1960.
Wow! He pulls it out of the air. Yeah. Yes.
And no idea.
All right. That is 2 points for JD.
So I broke that down because I remembered the way the Marvel thing started with Stan Lee. It was him and the DC publisher, his name was Steve, at the moment, were golfing, and he was bragging about how great the sales were on Justice League.
Right.
And yeah. Fantastic Four launched in 61, so little deduction and a good guess.
All right. So, Matt.
Yes.
The Justice League was not the first superhero super team.
Justice Society.
There you are. See, I didn't even need to finish it.
Come on. My question was way harder than that for a first round. What the heck?
Okay. All right. Oh, hey.
Thank you, Dave.
I think you should be able to get this next one, Matt. I mean, JD. How many members were on the original roster of the Justice League?
Seven.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, that was easy. All right. Now let's get a hard one for Matt.
Right.
Where was the Justice League's first headquarters?
New York?
No. Matt, I mean, JD, do you have a...
I'm trying to come up with a Happy Harbor steel.
Yes. It was a cave outside of Happy Harbor, but I will take Happy Harbor.
Thanks.
All right. That means you are now in the lead with 3-2. Oh, no. 5-2.
Yeah.
All right. Now I got to give you a hard one.
Go for it.
Okay, this is not a comic book one. This is more of a cartoon one. In Justice League Unlimited, who was the clone of Supergirl that was the main weapon used by Cadmus?
Give me a second.
So when can I steal it?
Go ahead. I can't get it out. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Is it Power Girl?
I will.
It is, but they named her something different.
Yes, they did.
What it is?
Okay.
Something
like a Galetta.
Now,
but it is technically Power Girl.
Give it to him.
All right, I'll give it to him.
Oh, thanks.
You're still new.
Thank you, JD.
No problem. I need competition.
All right.
Galatea,
yes. At one point, one of the members disbanded the team and moved it to Detroit. Who was the member that disbanded them?
Is that a matter of JD? I forget.
I'm sorry, that's Matt's question.
Oh, man. Who would go to Detroit?
The answer is no one, but...
No one, yeah.
Boy, I just defended Michigan.
I want to say Batman.
No.
Yeah, Steel. I didn't think so.
Okay.
Aquaman.
Yes! The least obvious choice to go to Detroit.
It was Aquaman.
All right. Wow. Well, then the follow-up question for you, JD, is why did he disband it?
No idea. I was four. The real answer is because they wanted a new lineup to compete with Teen Titans, but I don't know what the incontinuity answer was.
The incontinuity answer was all the Justice League members were busy with their own individual crises and issues they had to handle. So Aquaman wrote up a new charter saying that only people who could be members of the Justice League were people who could devote 100% of their time to being a hero in the Justice League.
I was going to say that.
So Aquaman's basically mini had nothing going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why they moved to Detroit.
Yeah.
All right. So wait a minute. Now it's whose question is this? It's you? Okay.
Yeah.
No, I think it's mine because that was the follow-up question.
Yes, it was
the follow-up. Stole from me.
Oh, my bad. Okay.
Yeah. It's all right.
All right. At one point, Green Lantern was in love with a different member of the Justice League. Who was it?
Well, I know in Justice League Unlimited, it was Hawk Girl.
Yes. Yeah. That's the answer.
Okay, good.
Oh, 5-6. Oh, he's closing in the gap. All right. Now here's I think this is a fairly difficult one. Why did the Super Friends cartoon, why was the Super Friends cartoon not called Justice League, JD?
Jeez. Not called. My guess, this is a total guess here. My guess is because Hanna-Barbera thought that was a better title. Super Friends was a more palpable title for a kid's show.
Close, but not technically correct. Do you have a guess, Matt?
Google. No, I don't have a guess.
Because of the Vietnam War. Because Hanna-Barbera was afraid that the term Justice League was too pro-military
really?
For a kid's show during the Vietnam War.
Mm. Okay.
Here's all the crazy facts about the Justice League. All right, so we need one last question for Matt. I only have one question left. It was supposed to be the tiebreaker. Can you name the original roster of the Justice
League? Let's see, we have Flash, Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, Aquaman, Wonder Woman. Is that six?
Yes, one more.
Who is not popular at that time? I know I'm forgetting it. JD, you can have it.
Steel. We'll go with Superman, Batman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, The Flash, and Martian Manhunter.
Yes.
Okay, I thought they weren't a part of the first roster.
No, they were the original seven, and then eventually Green Arrow, Hawkman, and
Snapper Carr.
Oh wait, I forgot about that question. Where is
what
it?
Question?
Yes, that was the I skipped that one because I skipped around and I shouldn't have done that. The Justice League had a mascot in the beginning. Who was it?
Snapper Carr.
Yes.
Okay.
That was a very goofy thing. So there you go. So there are some interesting facts for you boys and girls out there who are planning to see Justice League this weekend. Now you can go into your theater, load it with all these amazing facts, like Snapper Carr was the mascot. And you can wonder why you're watching the movie. Why isn't he in it?
Where is he?
But on that note, before we get to the news, I think we should take a quick break for this week's sponsor.
Hey boys and girls, it's your old pal Dave to tell you about this week's sponsor, Freshly.com. Are you like me? Do you want to try to eat healthy, but there isn't always time to run out and go shopping and buy fresh ingredients or even time to do the cooking? Well, Freshly.com has the answer for you. This is a great program for busy people who are trying to eat better. They send you prepared meals and they're refrigerated, never frozen. Meals are ready in 3 minutes. And it's delicious food. They have a Southwest bowl that I love. Sicilian style chicken parm. Grilled chicken roasted with butternut squash. Chicken rice pilaf. Turkey shepherd's pie. I mean, just amazing, delicious food. And it goes on and on. All their meals are guaranteed fresh, healthy, gluten-free, and free from refined sugars. So you know you're eating right. And the best part is right now, if you use our exclusive offer, use the code SUPERHERO at checkout, you will get $40 off your first two orders and free shipping on every single order. That's sick meals cooked by Freshly's chefs for only $39. And again, this food is amazing. You'll love it. I guarantee. So give them a try. Head on over to Freshly.com. Order your first meals today. Use the code SUPERHERO and get your first two meals on us. Again, that's Freshly.com and use the code SUPERHERO at checkout. Thanks.
All right. And now we're back to talk about the news. And you're going to start with some Marvel news. And keep it light here before we get into the heavy DC stuff. Marvel has released the first promo for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 5. Did you guys have a chance to watch it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, what do you think? I mean, they're not on Earth; they're in a spaceship. Like, what kind of feel do you think they're going for this season?
I don't know. I don't know. Man, I'll be honest. This show lost me a long time ago. I can't. I have a very difficult time getting up for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, I watched the trailer, and I haven't watched the show in a few seasons, so I don't have any idea what's going on. And And maybe that makes me poopy pants on this stuff, but I just, it doesn't grab me.
Is that the technical term, poopy pants?
That's what we tell the kids when they're being all down and dowdy. We're like, oh, you mean poopy pants today? So that's kind of how I feel watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay. How about you, Matt? Are you poopy pants too?
No, I'm the opposite. I haven't watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. faithfully since the first season. And, I think it's my fault because I've heard that's actually had pretty decent seasons since then. The only thing that I really like the music in this trailer, and it kind of made everything feel upbeat and exciting. Mm-hmm. Even though they're probably only showing footage from the first episode, that 2 hour series. Yeah. First episode. Anyways, right. I don't know. I thought it was pretty exciting. I think what Ravagers showed up, and I might check it out. I mean, if anything, it's a good jumping on point for me to see if this season's going to be worth jumping back out on the show for.
Right. The things I noticed in this preview is it almost felt like the special effects were up a little bit, than previous seasons. You know, like just a little bit that you saw. And again, you're right. It's only it's only a quick, 1.5 minute clip or whatever. So you can't tell a lot from that. And it's probably all stuff right from the beginning of the episode. But, you know, the stuff where they were looking out the window and looking at the spaceships, like that looked really good. Yeah, I am kind of curious how they're tying the Ravagers in. Is this actually them admitting there's a tie between Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the movies again? Because they haven't really talked about that in a while. And I will be honest, I jumped off with all of the – when they – last season when they were all trapped in the virtual reality thing, like that to me, it was getting to be too much. Like it kind of felt like it jumped the shark at that point. But, I think I will spend a couple weekends getting caught up, for their premiere, and I'll give them a chance again this season. So, you know, I'm not going to be poopy pants.
I am. I'm going to stay poopy pants. I mean, I'm tired of being the positive guy all the time.
Well, here's something that you can poop on. Inhumans ended with the lowest possible ratings it had. I think it was a total of 1.5 million viewers. Only 0.5 of them were in the coveted, you know, 18 to 29 age range. And so obviously it won't be renewed. But my question is, you know, do you guys think this affects Marvel in a greater sense at all? Do you think it's going to hurt them? You think it's going to make them rethink, you know, television decisions, or you think it's going to just, they're going to move forward business as usual?
I think they'll move forward, but I do think that they should reconsider, network television in general, because they've had a lot of hits, going digital, you know, the Netflix shows, and Runaways look really good coming on Hulu. I'm coming around to the idea that network TV just kind of sucks. You know, I mean, it does. It's got to be all homogenized and really watered down, and it's got to appeal to everybody. While at the same time, the general audience for network TV is vastly shrinking. So, I mean, like, you can't do as much, and the stuff isn't as good, and you're not making a lot of money. I mean, I don't see what their advantage is now. When they're breaking records with their Netflix, soon to be Disney, the streaming releases, why? Why, I mean, other than Ike's hard on for the Inhumans, like, what's the advantage to this? If people aren't watching, like, more people are watching the cheaper made CW shows than this. Like,
this is true.
I don't see where they win. And we've talked about Inhumans a bunch, and I've given out my thoughts that it's just their failed attempt at trying to recapture the X-Men in both comics and in TV. And I don't think they got it. I just don't think the property has legs.
Right. No, I agree. I don't think they did it right. It doesn't seem like they had the budget they really needed to do, and it might have worked better as a, you know, just a 2 hour movie, even if it was a 2 hour TV movie, you know, they could have put all the money into and made it look really good and gave us something exciting that just led into the season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but they tried to give them their own miniseries, and I don't think it worked at all. Did you watch it at all, Matt?
No.
Okay.
I did. No.
Nobody did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I think that's the problem.
Like, there was nothing about it that, that sucked anyone in, I don't think.
I think you used the right term. Like, I just don't see what the appeal is. Like, the Inhumans is not, I mean, granted, they've done some amazing work with properties that didn't have a lot of touchstones beforehand, but I mean, like, the Inhumans just doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't get me excited. I don't know if it gets anybody really excited to watch, and it wasn't like the cast was that stellar. The first trailer really kind of, they just really rushed it too fast. Like, well, yeah. Stuff's not done. I'm like, well, then why release it? Like, there's no buzz. Like, you have to, like, do a good job. Like, nobody outside true hardcore fans knew who the Guardians of the Galaxy were before right. that first trailer hit. And the first trailer, everyone went, oh my God, I have to see this. So if it's not awesome right away, why rush it? Like, this Inhumans thing is just, it's totally, like, spit in the face of everything they've done right. Like, everything that Marvel has done right in their media division, they totally dropped the ball with on Inhumans. So, why bother? Why go back to the well?
No, that's true. And, if the deal goes through that we talked about last week, if Disney is successful and ends up buying Fox, like, then they're gonna, you know, they're gonna actually have the mutants back. So they don't need Maybe. The Inhumans to fill that spot. Maybe. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's still up in the air, but that would be, and they can just act like the Inhumans never happened.
Yeah. Which to most people, it hasn't happened.
Right. I was going to say, that's probably their plan at this point. All right.
And I think that's why it's not, I mean, they're going to look back at it as like, all right, that was a setback. I mean, it's a bad choice, but I don't think it's going to detriment what they have going forward, especially right. not in terms to their Netflix series and their big movie blockbusters. In fact, I even heard that there's so much positive buzz on the Punisher series that I think it's going to completely eradicate any memory of the Inhumans at all.
And I think that's like I said, I think that's the lesson: is why bother with network television when you mm-hmm. don't need it.
True, but it also depends on. So actually, real quick to piggyback onto this. I haven't been following it closely enough, and maybe you guys have more information on this than I do. But the last I heard, it looks like Disney is pulling everything from Netflix.
That's what I'm hearing too. That includes
yeah, that includes the original shows. The Marvel shows. So do you think that will affect them at all? Or do you think people are just going to go, all right, I'll drop Netflix and jump onto the Disney thing?
I don't know if they'll drop Netflix. I don't know if that's a reality. I think the plan, I don't think they care. I don't think Disney cares what happens to Netflix. I think their game plan is to have people pick up Disney. And I think both Matt and I are young fathers, so I think that the Disney streaming thing's in my future anyway. Right. So it's probably, I think that's the idea is to grow it by you get the hardcore Disney people and then you get the Marvel folks. The people like the Marvel stuff will come on. I don't know if it's a good decision. I think I need more information on their streaming service and what it costs before. I think it's a risky choice, but I don't know if I can poo-poo it yet.
You don't know if you can poopy pants it yet?
Not yet.
Yeah, no, but I was going to say, my thing was, I was never a Netflix subscriber, but when Daredevil came out, I actually subscribed to Netflix just for that, and then ended up, you know, keeping it because I liked a lot of the stuff that was on there. How about you, Matt?
Well, see, I like Netflix because of Stranger Things and all the other shows that
right.
it has on there, not just all the Marvel stuff, so I'll probably keep it. In regards to the streaming service Disney has, I would like to see all of the MCU library in this service. If that's all there, plus the Netflix, the whatever shows that they have now, their extended universe or whatever, then yeah, I'll definitely be on board. On top of course, all the princesses and all that other stuff. Cause my daughter is starting to like My Little Pony and these colorful shows. So yeah, it's right. definitely something I'll jump on board with.
All right. Well, again, it's one of those things I think we have to wait till they actually launch it, which they haven't yet, and to see where it goes.
Well, it's the same thing with DC and their plans to launch their own service and having Titans being part of that thing. So
I think that one's a bigger gamble, to be honest with you. Marvel's accrued so much good faith and has got such a built-in fan base for the media stuff. I don't know if DC has that, man. I mean, I really think that – I think – I'm for sure getting the Marvel one. And I'm more of a DC fan, but I don't know yet if I'm if I can do the Warner or DC, whatever they're going to call it, streaming service. Like, I don't know.
They're definitely losing momentum on that, especially with, you know, with all the sexual allegations that we're going to go in later. here we go. We go dark. But I just think that all that stuff is also going to kind of – people – aren't going to jump aboard because they're losing a producer or whatever that made the CW shows big and popular. I don't know how it's going to translate well. Like how many people they're going to follow, like you said, JD.
Right. Well, and the thing is too, though, that's the other thing with the Disney service. They've said it's going to be substantially less, but they haven't said what the actual price is going to be for it yet.
Yeah, substantial is an interesting term. Like, it's substantially less. Like, let's define substantial, you know.
To some people, a dollar is substantial.
That's what I'm saying. Like, who's making this decision on what's substantial? I don't know. I want to see a press release.
Right. All right. And our last little bit of Marvel news before we move into our other stuff is Namor and Gentle. And I don't know who Gentle is because I haven't been keeping up with a lot of the titles on the Marvel side are joining X-Men Red. Have you guys seen this yet?
I just saw it.
Okay.
I think the idea of Namor as a mutant is not new. I remember when I was a kid, John Byrne had his Namor relaunch and marketed as Marvel's first mutant, which was, I think, smart in 89, you know, when the X-Men were on top. And I think that I think it makes sense too. I'm more intrigued with, I haven't read X-Men in a while. Like X-Men books it's hard to follow. I mean, sometimes because there's so much going on. If you bail out of it for a while,
and there's a bunch of teams now.
Yeah. I mean, it's always kind of. I mean, Tom Taylor is a really good writer. You know, he wrote Injustice for DC, and I'm curious, and I'm kind of fired up for bringing Jean Grey back because I think she's a great character. And it looks like X-23 is going to be part of the team. She's a cool character too. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I think I'll at least give this an issue. You know, it seems cool.
Right. I mean, well, the thing is, the last thing that I read with Namor, he was still an angry person.
Well, I think he's still going to be an angry person. That's part of Namor's brand. Like, he's angry. He's angry Aquaman, which is why they should never make Aquaman. That's super angry, because then he's Namor. Like, I don't know. I think this could be cool. I want to see how he gets there, because you're right, there is a lot of stuff going on. I mean, our friend Paul Aller wrote a lot of Namor stuff for Secret Empire.
Right.
So I don't know. Let's give it a look.
We should call Paul now and ask him.
Yeah, I'm gonna call right now.
So I mean, it'll be interesting. We'll see where that goes. You know, it seemed like a move out of left field in the fact that, you know, they're doing their legacy thing now, and then they make this big announcement, and it's like, does this tie into legacy somehow, or is this just, you know?
Well, the X-Men are usually kind of off in their own corner of the Marvel Universe anyway, and it's kind of always been that way. So I don't know. Like, I don't think it relates to legacy at all, unless it is have to do with how, I don't know, and I haven't read the X-Men. I'm not sure how or if Jean Grey has come back yet. So I imagine there's some fallout from that.
Right.
I don't know. Put it this way, this press release actually worked for me. Like, it got me more interested in X-Men than I've been in a while.
All right. So you'll be heading to your comic book shop to pick this up.
I'm gonna check it out.
All right. I'll have to check it out too. Darn it.
You do a review on it?
I think maybe. Sounds like a good idea. Sounds like a plan.
Sounds like a plan.
So before we go dark with our DC news today, like I think there's one story we kind of missed out on that's a Marvel / DC story. That's Brian Bendis going from a Marvel exclusive forever.
How could I forget that? That was my original top story when I thought about this like a few days ago.
Well, things took a left turn in the last few days. So
yeah, that is true. So yeah, Brian Michael Bendis, probably best known for the Ultimate Universe over at Marvel, has signed an exclusive deal for, is it 15 years?
I don't know what the years are, I'd be honest.
I know it was a long time. Maybe it was a 5-year deal, to write exclusively for DC. And it shocked the internet. So let me just say what my take is on it. Like, I'm not 100% surprised at this. I mean, number one, we've all been fans long enough. We know that artists and writers will jump back and forth from book to book, or from publisher to publisher, you know? And it's not like he hasn't worked for other publishers before. And in all honesty, like, his, to me, and maybe I'm wrong on this, his baby did seem to be the Ultimate Universe, and now they've folded it then into the MCU. So, or, I'm sorry, the Marvel Universe, not the Cinematic Universe. So maybe he kind of feels like he doesn't have anything more to say there.
I feel you. I don't know about it. I mean, like, he did a lot of main, like, 616 writing too. Like, he had a
Secret Invasion.
He had a super long run on the Avengers. Like, he's been with the company since 2000.
Yeah.
So he didn't bounce around. I mean, like, he did some Image stuff before, but he's been Marvel and Icon, which is, you know, their creator imprint for a long time. So, and I think this is really good. I'm a big Bendis fan. His Ultimate Spider-Man run is, I think it's one of the best, you know, other than Usagi Yojimbo, I think it's one of the best runs of a single creator on a title for a long time. And I love the whole thing. I love Brian Bendis, and I'm excited to see what he does with DC.
We've had this conversation before, and I told you my problem with the Ultimate Spider-Man, didn't I?
No, we've never had this conversation. Not with me.
Okay, so my issue is he tells the origin story over 7 issues, and he doesn't even become Spider-Man till like issue 5. And I always felt like the only reason readers put up with that is because you know the payoff is Spider-Man. If this was any other book, you know, if this is a brand new character, any other book, I don't know if people would have put up with it.
I disagree. Invincible's very similar. Like, it took, I don't remember how many issues, but it took quite a while for him to become Invincible, you know, the character, as I recall. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But I mean, yeah, you get some benefit of the doubt with the fact that it's Ultimate Spider-Man, and then you have Spider-Man on the cover of every issue, but it's a good story. Like, and it became very influential in the last 3, and all the movies, like, there was tons of elements they took from Brian Bendis' work when doing, like, between the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, the Andrew Garfield one, and this current MCU one. Like, I think what Brian Bendis did is almost as iconic as what Stan Lee and Ditko did in the 60s. Like, I think he really breathed new life into it. And I mean, the fact that he stuck with it for so long, like, he really got a complete story with it.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm a fan. I mean, Avengers Disassembled, House of M, Secret Invasion. Like, I like all of those stories. I just was never a big fan of the Ultimate stuff.
I get that. I think Ultimate Spider-Man was far and away the best of the Ultimate stuff.
True.
That's my opinion. I never really got into the other Ultimate titles, but I really liked what Bendis did with Ultimate Spider-Man.
What do you think, Matt, since you're the youngest here?
To be completely honest, I haven't read much of Bendis stuff. yeah. So being a DC guy, I mean, I'm used to John Snyder, Tom King, and all these great writers that came out of there, and even Jeff Loeb. So I'm excited. I mean, on one end, I don't want him to overshadow the creators I really like on DC. But on the other hand, I'm excited to see somebody who is highly regarded in the comic book, you know, community to be a great creator, great writer. So I'm excited to see what he brings to the DC table with the, like, a new toolbox, a new play chest, you know, some new toys. I'm excited to see where that goes.
Well, and that's a question I kind of had when this announcement was made. And I'm sure they signed him with a plan. Like, they're not just going to sign him and say, figure out what you want to do. Like, either he has something he wants to write or they want him on a particular book. But right now, a lot of the best writers, in my opinion, are on DC. You know, Snyder, Jeff Johns, and even some of the, you know, even some of the people that have been there forever, like, well, not forever, Jim Lee, though, has been there for a while. You know, like, a lot of very creative people. Like, is he going to stand out in that crowd, or is he going to, you know, not be as, is he going to be get overshadowed by all these other guys?
I don't think so. I think that Brian Bendis sells more than all those guys traditionally, right? Like Brian Bendis books in the last couple of years, they've gone down a little bit because I think he did kind of lose his muster a little bit there. He's been there for so long, but Brian Bendis moves books, like, and he's got a unique voice. Like when you read a Bendis book, you know you're reading a Brian Bendis book, and people could critique that, like, oh, if there's Darren Bendis speak, and you know, it's all these, you know, double page spreads with everybody just talking. And I think that makes his book, but that's what makes his books. Like he's the mammoth of the comics world. And that's what I like about it is DC stuff is usually so high concept that I think a lot of the DC books don't nail the small character moments as well as some of the Marvel books do. And I think it might be because, you know, Marvel defeat the clay heroes and DC stuff is more high concept in nature. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what Brian Bendis can do with some of these books. Like, everyone wants Bendis on Batman, but that just seems like such an obvious thing for me because Bendis came up as a crime guy. I want to see Brian Bendis do Superman. I want to see Brian Bendis just like those small character quiet moments that he does so well. I want to see that done in Superman. I want to see him take an obscure character and go to town with it. Like, I think he will stand out. I think it's going to breathe some new life into him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I can see that.
CBR shared a tweet that Brian Bendis sent out with all his reading that he's doing. And a lot of them are Superman, Justice League, and Legion of Superheroes. So, and then, of course, a couple of Jeff Johns' omnibus, you know, works. So I think that that's kind of interesting because I feel like he would get a shot at Superman because I feel like after who's writing it? Jeff Jurgens is writing it right now. I think after the Oz effect, which is ended, I think, and then after the Manhattan Doomsday Clock story is over, I think Superman might get kind of a reboot, and I think it'd be a perfect time to get somebody like Bendis on there. You know, a fresh take.
Yeah, and especially coming off of Dan Jurgens, who, man, has anybody other than maybe Jerry Siegel written more Superman stories than him? I mean, Dan Jurgens had a dynamic run in the 90s, and I really like what he's done on Action since he's come back, but I definitely think that we could use a different take on Superman now. Like, it's cool.
No, that's true. I mean, if we could get a modern take on Superman that doesn't sink him down to, you know, our level, which I think Bendis could handle, I think that would be awesome.
It's good, and I think it's going to stretch his creative skills a little bit too. Like, I think this is going to be a good challenge for him. And I hope it is Superman. Like, I hope I haven't just built something up in my head. Like, the idea of Brian Bendis writing Superman is exciting to me.
Right. Okay. All right, so here we go. Okay. So before we get into this, boys and girls at home who are listening, we normally avoid topics like this on purpose because we want to keep this. I mean, we say stupid stuff and we might make innuendo jokes, but we try to keep it somewhat upbeat and family friendly on this show. And so, if you listen to this show with your kids, you might not want them to listen to what we're about to talk about. Or you might. It's up to you. But we'll tell you, with everything going on in Hollywood, it is now affecting things that we're fans of. So I kind of felt like it was time we talked about it a little bit with three articles.
So this is called the Poopy Pants segment.
This is the Poopy Pants segment of Superhero Speak this week. So here we go. We're going to start out with Eddie Benghazi.
Berganza.
I'm really bad with names. You know that. Actually, there's been an update to this statement. So initially he was suspended, while they were looking into claims of sexual, harassment against him. He is one of the top editors over at DC. It has come out today that he has been, let go of from DC over this now. So he no longer works over there. I have nothing to add to that at this point because I don't know the full extent, of what he was accused of. This was the first one that affects comic books directly. That's why I included it. You guys are quiet.
It's tough, man. I mean, like, here's a personal take on this. Is like, my buddy Aubrey Sitterson shared the story online this weekend, and I tweeted, like he said, it was when he got suspended, and I replied, good. And I actually lost a follower of mine, like a guy who I respected a lot, who followed me, and, you know, he unfollowed me because I'm an artist, a DC artist. And, it's a tough spot, man. I mean, like, there's no middle ground on this.
Because, well, yeah, somebody who actually works over at DC might be friends with this guy and mm-hmm. doesn't believe the allegations.
No. The allegations are true. I mean, like, if you follow this, okay. I've been following this story since 2012 when Bleeding Cool broke it back then. Like, I don't want to get into details because they're gross, man. They're just gross.
Yeah,
but they knew it. Like, all it is like, he's done some very inappropriate things to females who weren't comfortable, who didn't ask for it. It's not rape. It's some sexual harassment, like assault. We'll just say sexual assault stuff. And they knew. DC knew. Like, he got demoted, and they really kind of let it stand. Like, they I don't want to say forgive because it's like, that's not the right term because you don't know, nobody knows what goes on in those corporate environments.
Right.
But everybody knew. It was like one of comics' worst kept secrets. Mm-hmm. And it got controversial a few years ago when Shelley Bond and Karen Berger got let go, but Eddie Braganza was still there. And it just, like, I know a lot of people who really dislike, like, I know the guy's a great editor. He's edited everything over there. The books are good, but man, that's a big old cloud to hang over stuff. And, you know, maybe I screwed myself from ever doing anything by saying good when the guy got suspended. But, man, that's how I feel. It's just, it's not right. You know, and it's over. It's over, and hopefully things can get better now. But it's such a bad, situation, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. So let's just quickly go through the second two. Andrew, and then we can talk about it, I think, in an overall way. It's probably the best way to do it.
I agree.
Andrew Kreisberg, who is one of the producers of a bunch of shows that I watch. And I know you guys probably watch them at least occasionally.
I do.
And we're talking about, Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow. He is currently on suspension from the shows because of allegations of sexual harassment against him. Which, you know, at the moment leaves the future of those shows, up in the air. We'll say that. Not like it's, you know, I mean, it's not it's not Berlanti, thank God. I think it would be worse if it was those guys that were in trouble. But you know, he's worked closely with this guy on all those shows. And finally, just the third story that we have about this, which I say good for her. So Gal Gadot has come out and said that she will not return for Wonder Woman 2 unless Brett Ratner, who also has, allegations of misconduct against him, is still the executive producer of the movie. She will not return. So, so if we start with that one, I kind of think Warner Brothers will cave on that. You know, I'm sure there are hundreds of people out there that want to produce these movies.
Yeah, I think they'll probably maybe find Nolan again, work with them or somebody. They'll find a financing partner on this. Brett Ratner's a slime ball. Like, good for her.
Yeah. Right.
I think it's a definite. They should, otherwise they're just going to lose Wonder Woman 2 in general. You know, lose respect from fans who love the first movie, lose respect probably even from the internal team, Patty Jenkins. And
Yeah. They won't survive. I mean, Warner Brothers doesn't want to lose that PR battle. Like, there's no way they would choose Brett Ratner over her.
Yeah. I mean, it's a movie that was, you know, being held up as a, you know, a great example. It's something that girls can go to and finally be a fan of superheroes, and it's something for them. It's not just a guys club anymore. And like, you don't want this dark mark on that, you know, just obviously you're not going to sit there and go, oh no, we stand by him. That would be stupid.
Yeah. When they've already, you know, letting go all these other people like, Andrew, you know,
Kreisberg.
So.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's another thing. I don't know how much, you know, say he has in what goes on in the shows, you know, at this point. So.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, so, like, do you think that will affect the quality of the shows? Do you think it'll affect what we're seeing? Do you think the stories might change based on this?
I think so.
I don't know. At this point in the year, I don't think so because these writers' rooms pretty much have seasons mapped out already.
Yeah.
And writers are, they're freelancers and the teams are writing their scripts. So this year they have their trajectory and their path. Could affect it for next season. And not necessarily for the worst. I mean, there's a lot of good writers out there. And I don't know. I don't know. Who knows where these, I don't want to say like, well, this allegation is less than this. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It seems like a really, I don't say it seems like a bad time to be a gross perv, but I mean, like, it seems like what used to be acceptable, people are finally saying that's enough and, you know, we need change. And it's hard to speak out about these things until, you know, I think Harvey Weinstein kind of showed everybody, man, we got to do better as a people, right. You know? And it's tough. Like I said, I mean, like, I think that's kind of the thing with the Braganza thing that really hurts is you heard a lot of women especially kind of got blackballed. I mean, I don't know. I can't vouch for anything. Listen, this actually happened. This didn't. It's all hearsay and conjecture.
Right.
But it seems like the industries are going to be better if they're cleaned up. And I mean, like, and I hope these people can improve and become better people. You know, I mean, I'd hate to see a guy never work again. You know, I mean, nobody wants anyone to never ever work again. I mean, I'm a believer in rehabilitation. I'm a believer that people can change. I just hope they do.
Right. I mean, you take a look at Kevin Spacey, you know, and like there was a movie that he worked on that's supposed to come out next month, and they've completely removed his character from the movie, and they're reshooting all his scenes with another actor.
All the money in the world.
What was that?
All the money in the world.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Christopher Plummer.
Plummer, that's it. Yes, yeah. Plummer's taking his place. And it's like, you know, is that a sign that his career is completely over now? Or is that just, we wait till the dust settles and is he going to just reemerge in a couple years?
So to add on to that, Mel Gibson is in a movie, is in Daddy's Home 2. So I do think Hollywood forgives and forgets as long as people say they're sorry. Whether they deserve forgives and forgets is not up to me. I mean, that's up to an audience.
Right.
I don't know. I think that Kevin Spacey will probably get another crack at something before anybody else because he's Kevin Spacey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that Brett Ratner probably can change the name of his production company and be a little more of a silent partner and still. I guarantee that's what happens. Like, and he'll still find work. He probably won't direct anymore.
And that's what kind of bugs me about this whole thing is like, you know, I was talking about this with, you know, people at work and, they were like, oh, you know, it'll just, some of these guys will end up going to jail. Some of them will come back to work in a few years and, you know, they'll just be replaced by other guys doing the same thing. And it's like, but, you know, why does that have to be, you know?
I agree. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't mean like, maybe I have an idea. I'm totally an idealist. Like, I'd like to think that this is kind of the part where people put their foot down and say, well, that's enough. You know, all like D.W. Griffith made quite the stand with Birth of a Nation 100 years ago. You know, we don't have guys necessarily that forward with those kind of thoughts anymore. You know, I mean, like at some point society says, no, we're done with this and it changes. And I think this is that moment. I mean, like you saw that New York Post, headline where, you know, Eddie Braganza was unfortunately one of those people named, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, one of those people named. I think that this is the time where people go, we're done. And it's on, quite frankly, you know, guys like me, you know, white guys to adjust and change. I mean, that's where the problem is. So.
No, I totally agree. But, I know that, I don't think if my so everyone who listens to the show, they know that I have a daughter, and she's 23, you know, so she's an adult. And I would like to think, I'm pretty sure about this too, is that she wouldn't be in the situation that a lot of these women were in just because I know she would turn around and break the guy's nose. Because she went to self-defense classes, she was taught from a young age that you don't put up with that, And she's broken guys' noses before who've come on to her inappropriately, or you know she'll go after them. She's not a wallflower. But that being said, there are a lot of women who aren't taught self-reliance and being strong, you know. And
I don't think it's that simple, Dave. I mean, a lot of times it's people in positions of power. Like, there's a lot of writers this weekend who were, I know I talked to some friends, but I felt like this too, who were afraid to, like, say, you know, this is crap because, like, well, this will affect my standing and stuff.
When it comes to anything that's sexual, right, it's, you don't talk about that. I mean, even though things are out in the open more today than they were 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, you're still, people are uncomfortable talking about it, you know, especially in those kinds of situations. So that's part of the reason why you don't know how to react. And, you know, like, and again, I'm not saying that everyone can be cool-headed and react that way in that situation. And it's not, again, it's not simple, but I agree with you there. But, you know, we have to teach girls to be a little more, self-sufficient isn't the word, but a little more tough in those situations. I don't know how to do it. I'm not a psychologist. You know, like I said, my daughter went to self-defense classes. You know, she decided to see a therapist, you know, when she was a senior in high school. So it's made her a stronger person, but not everyone's going to do these things. You know?
And I don't think you can punch your way. I mean, this is a superhero show. It's crazy to talk about like this, but you can't punch your way out of every situation.
No, you can't. No, not at all. Not at all. But it's also, like you said, you don't know how to handle that situation when it comes up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're never given those tools when we're young, and it's tough. You know, and another thing is, you know, you have a son, I have a son. Mm-hmm. Like, the other side of that coin is we got to make sure we teach our sons that you respect women. And you say you wouldn't want a guy doing that to you, so a girl doesn't want you doing that to them, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's so weird because you said, you know, college athlete, you see things that you look back on, you're like, man, that's disgusting. You know, that's mm-hmm. what was considered socially appropriate behavior. Like, man, you watch sitcoms from the 80s and some of those jokes they make, like, I love Cheers, my favorite show ever. But sometimes, man, they make some jokes that you kind of go, that might not be right. You know, just like where social mores are today. And it's a different world. And I don't want to say, well, you know, the values are different than they were 30, 40 years ago, so this stuff is okay. Because it isn't. It isn't. Mm-hmm. But it is such a tough thing to be in. I mean, the fact that we have, I mean, Matt, you've got a little girl, and I mean, I couldn't, your thoughts on as a dad of a young girl.
Yeah, well, my thoughts on that, it's something I worry about all the time, and I definitely have plans where as soon as she's old enough to learn Taekwondo or something, she's going to be in that class, and so is mommy, and so is daddy, you know, we're all going to do it together, but yeah, something I worry about, and I think it's such a reflection of our time that this is actually happening, and it's a good thing that, you know, they're weeding out the, you know, all the bad people in Hollywood, or at least on the surface, it seems that way. And I think it's great that you hear stories like the Wonder Woman story with Gal Gadot, mm-hmm. you know, taking a stand saying, I'm not going to do this. And like, not only do I owe it to my fans who are, a lot of them are little young girls, but as a statement to the industry in general is that we're not going to put up with this crap anymore. You know, and that's what it is a load of poo-poo pants, you know? And I think it's critical to not only teach your sons, but yeah, for my daughter, that she's going to face these crap people. I mean, my wife talks about situations that she had all the time, you know, working at these different places she worked at, even at a school, which was predominantly Mormons, she still ran across a lot of scumbag guys. And it's unfortunate that not even those that devote themselves to, you know, God or to a higher purpose, that they too are likely to be gross, you know, likely to be intimidating or, you know, assaulting women. So I think that not only is it important to teach your sons to don't do that crap, but as a daughter to be aware that that crap's going to happen. It's just the fact of where the world is today. You're going to come across it no matter who it is, you know. But you got to be prepared. And
I think, Yeah, actually, I think you just hit the nail on the head, and that's kind of what I was trying to say earlier too. Like, you know, I told my daughter this from a young age. Like, you know, guys are scum. A lot of them, and I'm not saying everyone. Obviously, my son-in-law's a good guy, but you know, a lot of, especially when they're teenagers, they got one thing on their mind, and like, you just have to keep that in the back of your head, and like, you know, teaching our kids, like teaching our young daughters that this is a possibility. I think we always hope for the best, and we want to shield our kids from stuff like that, but we have to let them know that it's a possibility, you know, and it's tough. I'm not saying it's an easy conversation to have with your kids, but you know, it's better than be a little prepared than none at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, when my daughter started dating Matt, I bought a Louisville Slugger and would keep it by the front door. And I would have it in my hand when the boys came to pick her up. So.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah. Just, you know, just holding it. Oh, hey, you know, nice to meet you. And so every girl gets a Louisville Slugger. That's it. All right. Wow. So this has not been a great way to end a show, but kind of felt it's an important thing we had to talk about.
It is, especially in, you know, we talk about this stuff a lot with comics, with, you know, what we do see a lot of abuse in the comic industry. You know, we talk about it with cosplayers a lot all the time, but I think when people see what happening within the walls of companies and multimedia conglomerates, that it's an issue. It needs to be talked about. And no, I don't think anybody has the answers of how to fix anything. God, I wish I did. You know, right. I wish I could say, well, this is what we got to do. I wish I was smarter, you know?
So I, you know what, to all the parents out there, just, you know, if you got a little girl, hold her tight, let her know that you'll always be there for her, and you'll help her out in any situation she'll be in. You know, I think girls need to know that.
Yeah.
So, on that happy note, boys and girls, I think we'll put a pin in it for this week. So thanks for listening. And as always, don't let your cape caught in the door. Have a good week.